Welcome, deeply curious learners. Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into a truly fascinating and intensely honest memoir, Andre Agassi's Open.
That's right.
We're peeling back the layers of a life that achieved, you know, global fame and success, only to find this surprising internal landscape underneath.
Yeah, it's really not just a sports story. It's a profound look at, like, the paradox of success when it comes from deep internal conflict.
And that search for authenticity, right? Beyond what everyone else expects.
Exactly. We're looking at a story that challenges almost everything we might assume about, you know, professional achievement. Agassi, I mean, a tennis legend.
Huge legend. 8 Grand Slams.
Right. The majors, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, all those.
Mm-hmm.
World number one.
Mm-hmm.
But he chose to recount the psychological burden of it all with just stunning, almost brutal honesty.
And our deep dive today, it's drawing mainly from his memoir, Open, which has that subtitle, The Paradox of Self-Discovery and Success.
Yeah, and also some insights from Tennis Hatred, an autobiography. It really paints a picture.
So our mission here is really to pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge from Agassi's journey.
Yeah, like what happens when that external success, the fame, the money, it just masks this deep internal turmoil.
And how do you even find authentic purpose when your path felt kind of forced on you from the start?
Agassi's perfectly positioned to tell this story, not just because of the wins,
right,
but because his life is this amazing testament to transformation from, like, a reluctant champion who hated the game
to a really purposeful philanthropist, right, finding a new passion.
Exactly. It's quite a journey.
Okay, let's unpack that journey then. Where did it all start for Andre Agassi? You'd think, you know, natural love for the game, kid discovers tennis.
Yeah, that's the usual story. But nope, his childhood in Las Vegas, very different picture.
How so?
Well, the entire foundation of his career was basically built on conflict, almost engineered for it, you could say.
Engineered by his father.
Yeah, his father, Mike Agassi, Iranian immigrant, former Olympic boxer. He was just relentless.
Relentless.
He literally designed Andre's life around tennis. Built a court in the backyard, mm-hmm. created this menacing, souped-up ball machine he called the Dragon.
The Dragon.
Seriously.
Seriously. Andre talks about just countless hours of forced practice, drilling thousands and thousands of balls.
Wow.
And it bred exceptional skill, no doubt, but also this deep, secret hatred for tennis.
He actually uses the word hate.
Oh, yeah. Famously. He said, I hate tennis. Hate it with a dark and secret passion, and always have. Pretty strong words.
Wow. So definitely not passion from the get-go. It was parental ambition.
Totally. A ticket to the American dream, as the sources put it.
Which brings us to this idea you mentioned, the paradox of imposed excellence.
Yeah.
Can you unpack that a bit?
Sure. It's this really fascinating kind of counterintuitive idea that amazing talent and success can actually grow out of situations that were forced on you.
Right.
Mice pushing, it definitely created a champion.
Mm.
But the psychological cost was huge. Planted all these seeds of resentment, internal conflict. So it kind of challenges that whole idea that you have to love something to be great at it.
Exactly. It shows that mastery can develop even without love for the activity.
Mm.
Makes you wonder, you know, how much of what we call talent is just sheer repetition, maybe even unwilling repetition and endurance.
And the pressure didn't stop at home, right? He got sent away pretty young.
Yeah, 13, sent off to the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy in Florida.
Which he describes as, what, an exile?
An exile, even a prison. Imagine that at 13.
God, that must have been incredibly isolating.
Totally. Stripped of home, family. He felt abandoned.
And that isolation, did that feed into his later image?
Absolutely. It fueled that rebellious streak, you know, the mohawk, the eyeliner, breaking all the rules, the dress codes.
So it wasn't just being a teenager.
The memoir suggests it was more like a survival mechanism, a way to grab some identity, some control in a situation where he felt he had none.
He hated the academy, hated tennis.
Hated it. But, and here's the paradox again. He knew the only way out was to succeed at the very thing he hated.
Wow, that's intense. The only escape route is through the thing you despise.
Yeah, it really shows how those external pressures can shape you and how, maybe weirdly, the desire for freedom itself can be a really powerful, even if conflicted, motivator.
So despite all this internal stuff, his talent was just undeniable. Turns pro at 16, boom. Bursts onto the scene.
Explodes, yeah.
And this is where that public image really cemented itself, the anti-establishment look.
Oh, yeah. The long dyed hair, neon everything, denim shorts.
And that slogan, image is everything. What was really going on behind that?
Well, the sources say it was complicated. Partly, sure, genuine rebellion expressing himself, but also a barrier, a carefully built shield.
A shield for what?
To hide deeper insecurities, you know, and the fact that he didn't really have an authentic identity or purpose within tennis itself.
That whole authenticity versus public image thing you mentioned.
Exactly. It's central to his story. The sheer exhaustion of keeping up a public persona that's totally at odds with your private reality.
Uh-huh.
The psychological toll.
Yeah.
It's immense.
And the story about the hair. That's wild.
Isn't it? The famous long hair was actually a wig.
No way.
Yes. And he lived in constant fear of it falling off during a match.
A wig. Imagine trying to play world-class tennis worried your wig's going to fall off.
I know. It sounds almost comical. But think about the stress, the isolation of carrying that secret.
Yeah, it really speaks volumes about the pressure he felt, the layers he had to maintain.
Totally. And he achieves all this success, right? Fame, money, world number one, wins Wimbledon in 92, which is kind of unexpected.
Right. Defied expectations, looked like pure triumph from the outside.
Exactly. But internally, was it joyful?
The sources say.
Not really. Not pure joy, anyway. The Wimbledon win, he described it more as relief.
Relief.
Yeah, like immense, overwhelming relief. He'd finally shut the critics up, met his dad's impossible expectations.
But still empty inside.
Pretty much. Even at the absolute peak, the memoir talks about this profound emptiness. He said something like, a win doesn't feel as good as a loss feels bad. And the good feeling doesn't last as long as the bad. Not even close.
That just captures it, doesn't it? The burden of playing out of fear, not love.
Absolutely. Fear of failure rather than love of winning. It really underlines that huge gap between external success and, you know, real internal fulfillment.
And that emptiness, that disconnect, it led to a pretty dramatic fall, right?
Oh, yeah. Motivation just tanks. Injuries start piling up. His ranking plummets.
How far did he fall?
All the way down to world number 141.
Hmm.
Shocking for someone of his caliber.
And then there's a really tough confession from that period.
Yeah. This is during his absolute rock bottom, personal and professional. He reveals he used crystal methamphetamine.
Wow.
Failed a drug test from the ATP, that's the Association of Tennis Professionals, the governing body.
Right.
And then lied about it. Claimed he accidentally drank a spiked soda.
And they believed him.
The case got dismissed, yeah. It's a moment of just brutal honesty in the book. Shows a man really spiraling, hitting crisis point.
Underscores that loneliness too, maybe. Even with all the fame.
Definitely. But that rock bottom, it actually became the catalyst, right? The turning point.
How so?
His marriage to Brooke Shields ended around then, and he made a conscious choice. Reclaim his career, but do it differently. On his terms this time.
So how did he start rebuilding?
This is where that whole idea of redemption and second chances really comes through. He basically built a new support system from the ground up.
Based on?
Trust. Genuine connection, not pressure. He hired Brad Gilbert as his coach.
Who taught him to win ugly.
Exactly. Yeah. A strategic, pragmatic style. Very different from Agassi's sort of natural perfectionism. A big mental shift.
And wasn't there someone else really important?
Yes. Crucially, his trainer, Gil Reyes. He became this loyal, wise, almost surrogate father figure.
Gil Reyes.
Gil's mantra was, we're muscle. Emphasizing shared struggle, resilience, giving Agassi that unconditional support he'd maybe never really had.
So moving from external expectations to internal support, defining his own values.
Precisely. And he literally started over.
Playing those lower level tournaments.
Yeah, the Challenger circuit, way below the main tour. Just grinding, rebuilding his ranking, point by point, real humility, real hard work.
And it worked. That climb back leads to the 1999 French Open win.
Which completed his career Grand Slam, winning all four majors.
Huge.
That must have felt completely different from Wimbledon 92.
Oh, absolutely. This win felt earned, meaningful, because it came from his choice, his growth, his self-acceptance.
It wasn't just about tennis anymore.
Exactly. It was a personal reclamation. He stopped being a victim of his story and became the author of it. He said the scoreboard didn't just show the win, it showed what it is I found in himself.
That's powerful. The internal win being bigger than the external one?
Definitely.
So he rebuilds his career, rebuilds himself, and then finds personal fulfillment, particularly with Steffi Graf.
Yeah, connecting with Steffi Graf seems to be another huge turning point. She represented like peace, stability, real partnership.
They understood each other's lives,
yeah,
maybe. I think so. That deep, shared understanding of the unique pressures and triumphs of being elite athletes, she became this quiet, supportive anchor for him.
allowing him to build the family life he wanted.
Exactly. A stable family life he'd craved but never had. And it was a healthy partnership, right? Supporting his growth, not demanding performance or image. Such a contrast to earlier relationships.
And having that stability, that's when he finds this new purpose, the school.
Precisely. The Andre Agassi College Preparatory Academy, a charter school for at-risk kids back in his hometown, Las Vegas.
So tennis, the thing he hated,
becomes the engine funding his real passion, which turned out to be education.
He had that realization, didn't he? Tennis was never the point.
Tennis was just the vehicle.
Yeah.
Profound. And his own difficult relationship with school because he barely went due to tennis.
That fueled his passion for education reform.
Seems like it. That's that transformation of pain into purpose idea again. Our deepest wounds, our resentments, sometimes point us towards our most important work.
You really feel him making peace with it all, his whole complicated life and legacy, during that emotional farewell at the 2006 U.S. Open.
Yeah, it was a moment where you saw the whole person. Not just the tennis player.
Yeah.
Someone who'd wrestled with his demons and come out the other side with a deeper understanding.
So thinking about all this, what does it mean for us, for you, the listener, trying to figure out your own path?
Well, Agassi's story is just such a powerful guide, especially if you're on a path maybe you didn't passionately choose yourself.
Okay, so first takeaway.
First, I think Agassi's journey forces us to question the source of our success. Was it really chosen, or was it like a dragon someone else put there?
Right, because even global fame felt empty when it wasn't his script.
Exactly. So we need to check. Is our definition of success actually ours? Or just an echo of what others expect? True fulfillment, he teaches us, is internal, found in growth, relationships, contribution, way beyond trophies.
Okay, second point.
Second, it highlights the really complex, kind of evolving relationship we can have with our work. You don't actually have to love your job every single day to find meaning in it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes fulfillment comes later, through commitment, through mastering the skill itself, through the service your work eventually lets you provide.
Yeah.
Even if you weren't super enthusiastic at the start.
So mastery itself can bring satisfaction and become a means to something else.
I guess he showed that, yeah. It can become a vehicle, like tennis did for him.
Okay, and a final lesson.
Finally, it's just a powerful lesson in transforming negative emotions. Think about it. His resentment, his frustration, his pain. That became the fuel for his most important work, the school.
He didn't just get over hating tennis.
No. He channeled the lessons from that struggle into building something bigger than himself. So it makes you ask, right? Where might your own frustrations, your struggles, where might they be pointing you? Towards needed changes, unaddressed values.
That's a great point. His journey really reminds us that our story isn't fixed. It's not predetermined.
Not at all. You can reclaim agency, take back control, even if the beginning felt totally imposed on you.
It's never too late to look at your life honestly, make those tough changes, and align with what truly matters to you. Build a legacy that feels authentic.
Absolutely.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you, our listener. How might the very things you've resented most in your past actually be preparing you right now for your most authentic and impactful contributions in the future?
Something to really think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world and profound lessons of Andre Agassi's Open.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.